Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Moving into the 4 o'clock hour, that was Evan Lazar and the Patriots Daily Podcast yesterday, right? They record that thing every day?
That's a separate one with Alex Barth.
That's not Patriots.com Daily. No. Okay, that's something else. Excuse me.
That was Catch 22 or All 22.
That's right, Catch 22.
Yeah.
With those two young bucks. Evan Lazar there with the big take. He's in the locker room. Offense is mad at the offense. Defense is mad at the defense. Why do we have to go out there, get our ass kicked, but Drake May sitting on the sideline, which I thought was actually sort of an interesting angle to that. Because that's not so much, hey, this guy's going to help make us better. It's, hey, how come this guy doesn't have to go out there and get punished like we do every week? Which I hadn't really thought of it that way. I don't know if that necessarily speaks to a more positive or negative view of Drake May in the locker room. I couldn't say. And it doesn't seem like Lazar wants to explain right now. We didn't mention this the first time we brought this up, but Lazar went across the street, or I guess downtown now, or uptown, if you want to be geographically accurate, and he basically fell on the sword and said, you know, I exaggerated. I got a little carried away. It wasn't really a mutiny. So sorry, everybody. Like, I let everyone down. It was like when Don Zimmer, after he attacked Pedro, and he's like, I let myself down. I let the Yankees down. I let everyone down. And it's like, it wasn't that bad, actually. But Zimmer was. But for Lazar, I didn't really think he did anything wrong. I didn't think there was anything too over the line here. And, of course, this is our job, Andy. We say stuff like that all the time. The Patriots, though, in their building, under their banner, weren't having it.
It was one word, mutiny. I actually think that, because I think teetering is fine, and all the other stuff is fact, right? His observations that he saw he didn't see any of that as a Patriots employee. He saw all of that as a member of the media. What we just talked about, open locker room, post game, he's in there. He sees how people are acting. He sees, you get a sense for emotion, or you get people blowing you all. Like, you see everything in those periods after the game. The one word is mutiny, I think, because if you're Robert Kraft and you've hired a people person, a leader of men, like all these things we've heard about Gerard Mayo, and 4 games in, there's a mutiny. You got 53 guys, you know, because you think a mutiny. What does a mutiny mean? They're going to throw the captain off the ship, right? Like, they're getting their swords. They're getting whatever they have to fight with, guns, and they're going to burst into whatever that's called, like in the back where the captain sleeps.
The galley?
The galley's the kitchen.
Galley's the kitchen?
Yeah.
The captain's quarters.
Yeah. They're going to and drag him out and throw him off the boat. And that's a real problem for Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft and even Elliot Wolf and the hierarchy of the team. Mm-hmm. So it was one word that I think, you know, you get caught up. We all do it. You're rolling and you say a word and you don't even know. But then to compound the mistake, you know, you made one mistake. It's like the shortstop who boots a ball and then tries to fire it to first and throws it into the crowd. It was like, you probably should have just ate the ball. You made your first error. Let's just move on. There's a guy in first, but now the ball's in the stands and the guy's on second. He made it worse. He didn't make it worse. He didn't have anything to say.
He just said what
he
said, yeah.
They made it worse by scrubbing it and removing it. And that made it seem like, why would they do that unless Lazar is on to something and his eyes were right and he's dead on with his take to where this team is.
That comment cut deep to them, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. On a lot of levels. And now I will say, though, is this also another byproduct of the Gerard Mayo era? Is there, because I can tell you Andy Hart would have tried not to say this. I don't promise Andy Hart would have not said this under Bill Belichick, because Andy Hart got in trouble and got slapped on the wrist a few times for things he didn't said. But do you think there's a little bit of we don't have to worry about the big bad bully putting a red dot, as Joe Mazzulla would say, and taking us out with a sniper if we say the wrong word? Is there any chance that they're a little more loose culture down there, a little more freedom, a little more, what did he call it? He's braised rib dinners with the coaches. Yeah. Like, you know, we're just buddies and, you know, I can say what I really want or I can really think. Is the culture of freedom of speech potentially at least partially to blame for this?
I'm trying to think of who else, like, because Breer got kind of exiled, right? Didn't they stop letting him come in there?
That was in a press conference. Yeah, he went after him.
What did he do?
just kept asking the same question. I don't remember the exact topic at hand. It was like on to Seattle. Bill kept saying on to Seattle, I think, to him or something.
And what'd you get in trouble for?
Just different things I've said and read, written, just like minor stuff along the way that people would get sensitive about, you know, and not always Bill and not always Bears. Like, you know, Joe Judge was very sensitive about things a few times over the years and whatever. But I also was very careful because I think there was a heightened fear. I mean, I've talked to other reporters about this now, just like going to Gillette. In the old days, you felt like you and I go. We go in that security. We go to the tunnel, whatever. In the old days, people
Martha
would be,
lets us in with the little arm. Yeah, we're going right in. Yep.
But I don't really fear any. In the old days, you feared if I took a wrong turn and I somehow popped in front of somebody that, you know, sees me, Bill sees me, Bear, like, you could get kicked out. You could lose your credential, like Christine. I think more people now are like, oh, there's just a lesser fear of those things. And I just wonder, does that free Evan Lazar to say a little bit more? Did he get rolling because there's a little bit more freedom there?
Well, maybe, but now it quickly got shut down. And by the way, I think that's the way it should be. I think you should be allowed to go and think and say what you want without worrying about someone coming around and yanking your credential away. I don't think that's a very high-functioning way to run
for all members
organization.
Of the media? Are you talking about...
I'm talking about everybody. Yeah, any media, your own media, your people
but
who
are
in
different.
There, whatever.
Different. That is different.
I'm talking about what you just said, about how you were scared to go around there thinking that your credential might get pulled.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's a healthy environment.
Probably not, but it was successful for a long time, so you can do it.
Well, was it successful because of that, or was it successful because of Tom Brady?
Well, not just Tom Brady, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Rob Gronkowski.
Although they never won. Those guys didn't win.
Rodney Harrison.
But either way, I think that when you sort of look at it now, and that's actually kind of interesting, because maybe it's because the team sucks now, and for 20 years you're sort of, all right, well, we can't say stuff about mutinies because there's nothing like that's happening. And if it did, if there was a mutiny, if there was a bunch of Adelius Thomases or whoever causing problems, they get shipped out the door. The Patriots go right on humming along, winning championships and making it to AFC championship games. And you never have to worry about another mutiny coming up here because who cares? Like, you could even say that or report it, and then they just deal with it, and then it's over with, and you move on, and that's that. Now it's real. Now it's like, okay, yeah, there's maybe a mutiny about to happen, and if it does, we're not the type of team that's going to be able to just shoulder it and say, yeah, no big deal. We'll be back in the Super Bowl next year. Like, no, you won't. Who knows when this team's ever going to be back in a Super Bowl again? That's not where we are right now. So, yeah, I think there's some truth to that for sure.
So do you agree with me that this team is indeed teetering? Teetering was a good word.
Sure.
Was mutiny a good word?
I'm not in the locker room, so it's hard to say, but if it was just a bunch of guys frustrated, you know, taking out their frustrations after a loss, even me, Mr. Hot Take over here, can say that's a bit of a grabber, you know, maybe a little sensational. I'd agree with that, yeah.
Because this is essentially, to turn the clock back 20-something years, they hate their coach.
Yeah.
Right? Tom Jackson saying they hate their coach. If you're mutiny ready, you hate your captain. You're ready to take him out. We need a new leader. It's a coup. All of that. I don't believe they hate Jerod Mayo. I think they probably hate their lot in life right now, losing games, getting embarrassed, those things. But I would like to think he probably still has a very strong core of supporters. I mean, certainly Devon Godshaw has to be. And we also learned, I don't know if we've talked about this enough, we learned that when Devon Godshaw said that we had guys playing selfishly, Jerod Mayo had said it in a team meeting. Like, he was just trumpeting. He was playing the operator game and just saying what his coach had already said in a team meeting. So he was actually being a good soldier, right? I'm just parroting what the head coach said.
Yeah, but now, parroting it to the media, I don't think, is what Jerod Mayo wanted to do. Mayo didn't come out and say that. He didn't tell reporters that. He said that in a meeting, and then Godshaw told us.
But at the very least, it was not the words of a mutinous man. He was not getting ready to lead a mutiny.
A mutinous man.
I don't know if that's the proper term.
I don't know. I like that. It sounds...
yeah. But I thought of X-Men.
That sounds like something they'd say at the Salem witch trials. Like, are you a mutinous man, Giles Corey or something?
Whatever. And Jabril Peppers had comments in Karen Garigian's story, which says, you know, it's way false to say that he's losing the locker room. And I don't think David Andrews is allowing mutinies. I don't think Hunter Henry is leading mutinies. I think you could still, if we played a game like guess the players that would be on the mutiny list, Isn't it a pretty short list? I don't know that I could come up with a lot of guys that I would say would be ready to lead a mutiny right now.
Yeah, and that's another part of it. I think it's probably the younger guys. I think we know maybe some of them already, and I don't know that Godchild's necessarily leading a mutiny, but he is.
No.
He is out there speaking out. Someone like Pop Douglas maybe is a little more on the mutiny side. You know, some of the younger receivers, some of the NIL guys who are expecting to make a bigger impact in the league now than they are so far, which, by the way, is on them. I mean, you know, come on. It's not a storybook ending for everybody here. This is real life. This is the way it goes. But yeah, I would say, and I don't know these people very well, you know, like I don't know anything about them based on the way they play on the field, and you don't get that much from them after these games. But I would say there's probably not a long list of people ready to lead a mutiny. Maybe there's a handful, but sometimes a handful is all it takes.
Yeah, I don't know if I could come up with a handful. As I literally got, now you're right, there's some I just flat out don't know. I don't know about Hawkins. I don't know about Del Pettis. I don't know. Like, these are guys I really don't have much of.
And also maybe guys without the kind of, you know, cachet to lead a mutiny either.
But that's my point.
Right.
Would those guys have the ability to lead a mutiny? I feel like you'd need to steal one of the leaders. Like, you'd need to get one of the leaders to come over to your side, or a Jacoby Brissett. Could he lead a mutiny? Probably. He might be able to lead a mutiny right now. I don't know.
Be the nicest mutiny of all time, the most polite mutiny there's ever been.
Right.
The last couple of years, Bill Belichick was, Bill, it would never happen with Bill. There was a mutiny in the locker room with Bill. Mac Jones, Kendrick Bourne, Jacoby Meyer, all these guys were revolting against what was happening in that locker room. And they were talking about it openly. It wasn't subtle shots here and there. It wasn't Evan Lazar on the thing. It was Mac Jones at his locker, Kendrick Bourne at his locker, Jacoby Meyer's at his locker after the game, openly questioning the coaching and the play calling. That was happening on a weekly basis. Maybe not so much last year, but certainly 2 years ago in the Patricia year. I mean, that was happening all the time. You saw that over and over again.
And I don't know if it falls under mutiny, but you had certainly teetering on dysfunction when you had the defense talking about, well, I guess we have to give up 0 points if we want to win football games, right? Like, that's not a good culture. That's not a good locker room. And that's not necessarily pointing the finger at the head coach, but you're right. There was mutinous actions and feelings in this locker room for the last couple years, and I think there's less of those now. Doesn't mean they're good. Doesn't mean they'll win games. Doesn't even mean they have a good culture. I just don't think anybody is ready to throw the head coach off the boat.
Yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet either, but I guess time will tell. By the way, the injury reports are out for the Dolphins and the Patriots. Final injury reports of the week here on this Friday. We'll react to that, and we got our Miami Dolphins scouting report coming your way right after.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
This tells you what's trending. I believe that was Miami's only touchdown this past weekend against the Tennessee Titans. It's Christian Arcand. It's Andy Hart. It's WEEI Afternoons. Thanks for picking us today. That was an ugly game for the Dolphins, and the reason why the Patriots are favored is because of that game. The Titans stink. Will Levis gets hurt. They bring in Mason Rudolph, who also stinks, and he had a pretty good game. The Dolphins' offense cannot get out of its own way. Without Tua Tagovailoa, they're kind of useless. Even with him, they weren't that great this year to start off. A lot of shine maybe coming off the glare there when it comes to Miami, but they're still, in a lot of ways, you can make the argument that the Patriots are in worse shape presently right now than the Miami Dolphins are. Let's, before we get to our scouting report, Andy, the injury report is out, and for the Dolphins, there's one player out and three players questionable. Jordan Poyer, the safety, who they got from, he was a free agent, he was with the Bills for years and years, good player, he's out, he's been out, and didn't practice all week, so no surprise there. Skylar Thompson, questionable to go. Odell Beckham, questionable to go. He was a full participant all week, but he's missed the first four games of the year. And Cam Smith, their defensive back, dealing with a hamstring, a full participant all week long, but has been listed as questionable. I'd imagine he probably plays too. For the Patriots, it's a lot longer list, starting with Taki Taki, who is doubtful. He was limited all week. Kyle Duggar was a DMP most of the week. He's questionable to go. KJ Osborne, also a DMP all week, questionable. Following players are questionable and were limited all week. That would be Kendrick Bourne, Anthony Jennings, Jonathan Jones, Marcus Jones, Michael Jordan, Nick Leverett, Vidarian Lowe, Marte Mapu, Jabril Peppers, Laden Robinson, and I think that's it. Yes, Laden Robinson's the last one. So there you go.
Oh, that's it. Yeah,
nobody else. But all those guys, questionable, all of them limited all week in practice, except for Marcus Jones, who I think was a full participant on Wednesday. I'm not really sure, but either way, that's the injury report right there. The no one ruled out other than David Andrews and Caden Wallace, who got put on IL this week. But other than that, no one else has been ruled out. But really, a lot of guys there, a lot of important names listed as questionable.
And Duggar missing practice all week. That's trending toward not playing on Sunday. I mean, a lot of coaches feel like if you don't practice, you can't play. And that's a concern because the deep balls have been an issue for this team with him on the field. Now you say you're going to be without one of your two best safeties. Osborne doesn't bother me as much. Also, they have to Bourne's not on the roster yet. So if they want Bourne to play, he has to get activated to the roster, correct?
Right. Yeah, I think
so. Yeah, he's just been activated to practice. So there could be some interesting maneuverings over the next couple days with the roster and then the injury report. And then
maybe that's why Thornton's on the trade block.
Could be. You're getting another receiver back, although you're down a receiver maybe with K.J. Osborne not on the practice field. But that you're going to have some interesting things to talk about on the show on Sunday morning leading into the game.
Yes, we are. And right now we have something very interesting to talk about, and that is a full in-depth, down-to-the-studs scouting report here for the Miami Dolphins. We do this every Friday. We do it at 4:30-ish, and we're doing it right now. We start with what happened last week with the Miami Dolphins. Last week, an ugly loss, very ugly loss, 31-12. Not a score, Gami, I looked it up, but an ugly loss, 31-12 loss to the Titans. Snoop Huntley in his Dolphins debut, under 100 yards passing, 96 yards. So him and Brissett have that in common. I think Brissett did that against the Jets. Is that an under 100-yard game, I think?
Sounds right.
Rudolph came into the game. He played pretty well. Tyreek Hill, under 50 receiving yards for the third straight game. He also fumbled a lateral in this game. There was a ton of procedural penalties, too many men in motion, guys jumping early, stuff like that. It was an ugly all-around game for the Miami Dolphins. No real positives to take away from it. The Dolphins, this stat blew me away. The Dolphins have not led in a game this season. They haven't led ever in any game this season. The only game they won was that walk-off field goal, remember? So they have not held a lead in any of the four games that they've played so far this season. And the Snoop Huntley rushing touchdown that you just heard to open the segment, that was their first touchdown in nine quarters. Their long drought there between touchdowns. So all the things that you say about the Dolphins and how bad they are to start the year, it's almost like we're not being serious enough about it. Like, people are like, it's fine, they'll be fine, everything's fine. This is not fine. Like, this is historically bad.
I agree with you. We are not I think we're wowed by, oh, they still have Tyreek Hill and they still have Jalen Waddle,
right,
and they still have Mike McDaniel. Oh, they'll be fine. But I think if we were down doing radio in Miami, you're right, you'd be saying, none of this is fine. None of this is okay. What is going on with this team? I know the quarterback is out, but why do we, as you said, is it just the quarterback? Now we have penalties everywhere. We're going to drop the ball. We can't even get the ball to Tyreek Hill. He hasn't found the end zone since week one. The coach's record with Tua out is not good. So there is a history, a track record of this trending forward. Like, they are a bit of a mess. And that's why I think if you're a Patriots fan and you just listen to everything you just said, it came to, so you're saying there's a chance this week, huh? There's a real chance we could win this week.
Yeah, this is going to be such a bad game. The offseason additions and subtractions for the Miami Dolphins. They lost in free agency a couple of big names. Robert Hunt, their star guard, and Christian Wilkins, their star defensive tackle, both lost to free agency. They did make some additions. Kendall Fuller, who I like, Jordan Brooks, Shaq Barrett, Jonnu Smith, and Odell Beckham all signed with the Dolphins in the offseason. They extended Tua, and they extended Waddle. In the draft, they drafted Chop Robinson, edge rusher from Penn State. He's starting for them. They also drafted a left tackle from Houston, Patrick Paul, who is their backup left tackle right now in the second round.
I'd like to take Patrick Paul off their hands and see if he could be a starting left tackle with the Patriots.
That'd be great. Or just a left tackle at all. Any left tackle would be fine. Off-season drama, when it comes to off-season drama for the Dolphins, it begins and it ends with number 10, Tyreek Hill. He had that weird lawsuit. Do you remember this? He had a weird lawsuit with a girl who was at his house, and it's not, I know there's been other lawsuits with girls, but this one, she was doing, like, football drills at his house.
And I don't remember this.
They were doing, like, the Oklahoma drill, and she ran up and hit him, and then he pushed her, and she fractured her leg or something, and it was this whole weird thing. Like, she was there with her son, and I don't know if they were dating or what exactly was going on, but does anybody remember this back there? It was this really weird lawsuit before the season started. I'm not making it up, I swear. And the kid was there, and Hill had him doing drills, and then he had the mother do a drill, and then he, like, I don't know if he tackled her or what he did. He pushed her or something. She broke her leg, and she's suing him. And I don't know what the result of that is or if it's still in litigation or not. But that was some weird offseason drama. Then, of course, there was him being detained by the Miami Police Department along with Calais Campbell and Jonnu Smith and all those other people on the way to a game. This wasn't technically offseason. This was in season, but probably, I'd say, to this point, one of the more dramatic things we've seen with an NFL player, like, off the field in a while, right? Like, that's in a very public arrest like that, where it broad daylight on the way to the game, everyone can see him. Like, that was significant, I thought.
And then the way it kind of rolled Jonnu Smith and Calais Campbell into it, and they got involved, and they were part of the story, and then it's kind of gone away, quite honestly. You're right, it was a big deal, big visual, there was a lot going on. And then he had some things to say a couple times right after that. And then the guy went on administrative leave, the first officer or something, or administrative desk duty or something. And now I feel like it's just kind of gone away.
Yeah, I mean, it's what you'd expect, I guess, the police department sort of dealing with the backlash from that. And I think that ultimately, in the court of public opinion anyway, Tyreek Hill ended up being the sympathetic figure and all that. And I think that that's part of it. Like, it's hard to... He's a tough guy to rally around, you know? He's a tough guy to make a champion for something like this. So I think, yeah, it just kind of faded off. All right, he's making a statement. He's right, I guess, but I don't want to root for him, so forget it. You know, like, it was one of those type of deals. But, yeah, off-season drama, it was really all about Tyreek Hill and the in-season drama as well. That and, of course, Tua and his concussions, but that's another story. All right, players to watch. Who are your players to watch, Andy Hart? I've been talking
Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill would absolutely be my first player to watch. We'll talk later in the show. I may want a prop bet on him to find the end zone.
Okay.
I just think he's too fast and too good to go a month without getting in the end zone, especially against a defense that has maybe without one of its best tacklers in the back end in Kyle Duggar and hasn't really tackled and played up to its resume to start with. And I said to you earlier in the week, Waddle the same. But I also think Huntley. I think it was Phil Perry during today's Mayo press conference, I thought brought up a good point of, do you expect them to start to sort of roll in some Ravens-type stuff? Mm. It's McDaniel's offense and whatever, but some things that he does well that he could maybe get a little more comfortable, and he can move around, he can run a little bit. That's why I kind of like him on the over on the running yards, and I did in one of my parlays there. They still have athletes. They still have athletes on that offense, and that, to me, as much as you say how bad they've been, and they've been historically bad, this is their get-right game. I think they absolutely circle this and say it's a division foe, it's our get-right game, we know what they do on defense, we're the better athletes, we can go out there and put up points and put up yards.
In that game against Tennessee, Jalen Waddle, 6 targets, 4 catches, Tyreek Hill, 7 targets, 4 catches, they both led the team in that, but this was also in a game where you had 30 rushing attempts, and, you know, we've been talking a lot about mutinies and stuff like that today, Pop Douglas getting upset about not getting the ball. Jalen Polk and guys throwing tantrums on the field. No one cares if those guys do it. And even those guys, the squeaky wheel got the grease, right? I mean, they did feed Douglas 2 games ago after he had his little thing. When Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle start, making a big deal, making a big fuss out of not getting targeted enough, then you actually have to, like, listen to them. You have to do what they say because they're your whole team at this point.
And one of the other things you didn't list with the drama, they gave Tyreek Hill this weird extension, which wasn't... They just gave him a boatload of money. Like, they guaranteed a lot more money over the next 3 or 4... I think 3 years, $90 million or something like that. So, yeah, you're heavily invested at the wide receiver position, and you can't score. You don't score touchdowns. And when you do score touchdowns, it's your quarterback running in. That's not how your team should be succeeding. I don't care if you have a backup quarterback.
Agreed. All right. Other guys to watch. A'Shan, I think, is a good running back. He didn't do much last week, but I do think he's a big playmaker. At times, Jalen Ramsey is still a top-tier defensive back, and I like Fuller as well, Kendall Fuller, who they acquired in the offseason. All right. Some former Patriots and former Dolphins on the Patriots. How about Jake Bailey? The punter. He's the Dolphins starting punter. And
he's
always
a good punter.
I liked Bailey. I feel like they kind of just broomed him right out of here, but I liked Bailey when he was here.
Well, you know, there was issues there. There were stories and
things that went down. He had a whole thing, right? Like, he had a contract dispute, and it's like, you're the punter.
He had a contract dispute, then he got, like, suspended, then anything. Then there was some off-the-field stuff I've heard rumblings of, but in this era of scrubbing podcasts, I'm not going to bring them up because I don't really know if they're factually
true.
Very good.
I don't know what they are, so yeah.
This could be a battle of punters, right? Two bad offenses, bad teams, and two punters with pretty big legs. Both could be Pro Bowl punters. So we got to go.
Behringer. So it's cool. Sunday afternoon.
If you're in like the 300 level, you might get to see the ball a lot because these guys boom it and it's like, ooh, ball up our way.
Good
ooh,
point.
Ball drops down.
Another former Dolphin on the Patriots. How about starting quarterback Jacoby Brissett? He played for the Dolphins. It was one of his stops along the way. Devon Godshall, maybe a sneaky leader of this mutiny, is also a former Dolphin. Raekwon McMillan played for the Dolphins. And, of course, Jonnu Smith, starting tight end for them. Now, I think he's number one on their depth chart. Had two horrible years here with the New England Patriots. So there you go. And now it's time for my favorite part of this, the all-time Patriots-Dolphins team. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to look into this. I can give you my roster if you want. But who would you put at quarterback if you had had to name a quarterback that played for both the Patriots and the Dolphins?
Damon Heward.
Damon Heward's a good one. Scott Zolak is another one.
Ooh, Zoe.
Zoe played for the Dolphins briefly.
Yep.
And, of course, Brissett. So there you go. There's your room right there. Brissett, Zolak, Heward. Some good backups, right? Like three pretty good backups.
Yeah, good backups.
Right,
I don't want them starting, but decent backups. Good backups.
At running back, you got some options there. Robert Edwards. I heard Keith saying that this game is the Robert Edwards Bowl, the only two teams he played for. I get sad when I think about Robert Edwards and all the potential that was there in that stupid beach football game they played. Yeah. Then, of course, there's the immortal Jonas Gray, who had that one great game, mouthed off, got cut. Dolphins picked him up, and that was that. Last I heard, he was doing, like, stand-up comedy or something. And,
really?
Yeah, he did. This was, at, like, right after he stopped playing. So,
oh, okay, because I think
probably
he
a long time ago.
Now he's gone into the, consulting, coaching, helping young football players, recruits, process, NIL-type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Helping guys know their worth maybe a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. And maybe not make mistakes. Maybe set an alarm and not be late and those types of things.
That too. We also have Heath Evans. Heath Evans, the you got to pick up some yards when you need him. And Sammy Morris, who I was always a big fan of. Love Sammy Morris. Played
for
the Patriots and Dolphins.
What about, why am I drawing a blank? The special teamer running back who scored two touchdowns against them in the Gronk a couple years ago. He helped beat them. The Patriots backup running back. Oh, why can't I think of it?
Patriots backup running back.
Yes, basically a special teamer who was like a third string running back. And he
how long ago
touchdowns.
Was this?
Within the last 5 years? Five or 6 years. Absolutely. He had the touchdowns. Is the text line not helping me out?
I'm looking it up. But I don't see anything.
He had dreads. He was a core special teamer with dreads backup running
Brandon
back.
Bolden.
Brandon Bolden.
Yeah. He had two touchdowns against the Dolphins? All right. Okay, there you go.
Against the Patriots.
Dolphin. Right. I remember this now. Yes,
yeah.
I remember Bolden doing that. Good one. All right, Brandon Bolden. Add him to the list. Very good. Let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, at wide receiver. This is a pretty good group. You got your Wes Welker.
Yeah, obviously.
You got your Irving Fryer.
That's a good one.
Danny Amendola.
Yep.
Jabbar Gaffney. Devontae Parker, and that's it. But I mean, that's a pretty good wide receiver room right there.
I mean, you won that though. You took Wes from them.
Yep.
Wes became a superstar when you took him from the Dolphins. So you won that.
At tight end, you got Mike Gesicki and Jonnu Smith. Meh. And on defense, I just threw a bunch of defensive names in there. You got Junior Seau, Kyle Van Noy, the two Bucks, Terrell Buckley and Tabucky Jones, both Patriot Dolphin crossovers there. Rob Ninkovich played for the Dolphins, and also Jason McCourty. And I even threw in Aqib Talib, who I think was on the Dolphins right at the end of his career before he retired. And there you go.
What about Larry Izzo?
All-time. Oh, and Larry Izzo. Good one. H to the Izzo.
Larry Izzo was a core special teams legend here in New England for the beginning of the dynasty.
Yes, he was.
Come on. Show some respect.
I forgot he played for the Dolphins, and I don't think I saw his name on the big list I was looking at. But that's neither here nor there. How could I possibly forget Larry H to the Izzo? He was a big time contributor. And there you go. That is your Miami Dolphins scouting report here on WEEIF. Afternoon, 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll take a quick football breather and talk a little baseball after this. Pete Alonso, the big hero for the Mets last night. And should the Red Sox be in there participating right now in these MLB playoffs? I say yes, and we'll discuss it at length next. Goosebumps. Ooh. That put goosebumps on my goosebumps, to borrow a phrase from the Red Sox pregame show there. Subaru, I think, put goosebumps on your
Nissan.
Nissan.
Jesus,
whatever. There's a lot of cars. That put goosebumps on my goosebumps, that call. That was a great call. It was a great play. A three-run home run in the ninth inning there. It was part of the rally. They got four in the ninth. And then the game ended on a really awesome double play there with Lindor, too. It was just a tremendous game and a deciding game. It was game three of a best-of-five series there, and it was the Mets who come away with it. Sorry, best-of-three series, and the Mets come away with a 4-2 win. They advance. The only series that wasn't a sweep, and I was listening to that call, and I heard people talking about it today, and it was such a great call. It was so much fun, and it made me feel bad about Joe Castiglione. I wish he was still making calls, and I wish that there was still like a moment for him, not like that win at the end of the season, because that win didn't mean anything, but like another moment, you know, another moment where you get to get that classic Castiglione when he's excited, when a walk-off win, something like that. And there were a few of them over the course of the season, but it was just such a disappointment in the second half that, I don't know. I mean, the more I think about it, and the more I think of the Red Sox and how close they were to really competing for that wild card, you're right. Maybe they wouldn't have been a World Series contender, but wouldn't you love to at least have them have the possibility for a moment like that last night? Shouldn't that have been what the Red Sox were doing right now instead of being on vacation, or Kenley Jansen was on vacation a week ago, or any of that stuff? You know, like, this is where they should be. They should be with the Mets and with these other teams.
And speculative rumor, the guy who hit the home run, Pete Alonso, could have been a Red Sox.
Right.
Remember there was talk of him coming to Boston?
Yeah, I was into that, by the way.
He was the right, me too, mm-hmm. That he was the right-handed bat they might acquire, and instead you got Danny Jansen, and, you know, well, you didn't make the playoffs.
That was the best sports moment of my entire life, guys.
Really?
Wow.
Whole life, wow. Huh?
Wow. I mean, I'm young, so I wasn't really that sentient in 2015, so I've never seen the Mets win anything, and that was a special, special game for me.
Wow.
Jacob's had a glow about him all day.
I can tell.
All day.
It's the highlight of his life. That's pretty cool. No, it's a cool moment, and that has been absent from Boston from the fall for a while now. And that's what you're talking about there, winning playoff series and just competing and having that buzz and having that energy and that idea that you're in the mix with teams like, oh, I don't know. It's funny, the Phillies are in the mix. Who runs that franchise? Oh, yeah, Dave Dombrowski. Damnedest thing.
Good point.
We used to have a guy like that. And you look at the Dodgers. Remember when we were supposed to be the Dodgers?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we hired Bloom and it was like, well, we're going to be like the Dodgers because you're blending the Tampa way with the Boston market. And that petered out. Now, frickin', we never even talked about this. You see Bloom's back?
Yeah.
He's running the Cardinals as of, what, mid-next season? There was some weird transition of
power.
They
brought him in there as a assistant to the guy or whatever, and now he's going to be the main guy in charge there. And Terry Francona's managing again. He's going to be managing the Reds. This is weird, all these ex-Red Sox people. Francona in particular, because I thought he retired for health reasons and stuff, but he's coming right back out. He's all set. And Chaim Bloom, who, listen, the Cardinals didn't have a great season or anything, but they clearly see something in him. They like something about what he's doing, and you know, I think time is gonna be more kind to Chaim Bloom here, I think, as things go on, and these prospects that he coveted so much and kind of hoarded over the years are going to develop. I think people are going to look back at that and be like, all right, Chaim Bloom wasn't so bad. Kind of the same thing with Ben Cherington, although Cherington won a World Series, so he had that too. But I think with Bloom, hindsight's going to be good for him. I think history's going to be kind to him.
Is history going to improve the return for Mookie Betts at some point?
No, but I don't necessarily consider that a Chaim Bloom problem. I consider that a John Henry problem, having to trade the guy in the first place.
Have to trade him, get something for him.
I'm not sure there were a lot of better offers out there.
For Mookie Betts?
No, I don't think
so.
You couldn't get anything? It was a half a season, and you got a major league ready outfielder and two prospects. That's about what you'd get anywhere. I don't think that there were a lot of teams that had better offers out there than that. I don't think Bloom was inundated with all. It was a half season. I mean, that was all you're going to get. It's not like you extended him. The Dodgers ended up extending him. And by the way, tasking a guy his very first day on the job, here's what we want you to do. The first thing is trade our best player. Go out there, have fun, good luck. And by the way, he's got no terms, so you're just going to be selling him as a rental, and everyone's going to think you're getting pennies on the dollar. Like, I thought Bloom kind of got porked over in that whole situation, personally.
Well, he took the job.
I know.
That was the job, right? Like, that. I'm assuming he came in eyes wide open.
I think so.
To what the order of operations were going to be for him.
I don't know if they came. They told him in the job interview, by the way, we're going to have you trade Mookie Betts. Like, I don't know if that was
part
of it.
No, but they might have been. Maybe it was. You're going to have to make some tough decisions and do some tough things here with the roster and our financial limitations. I'm sure he knew what he was doing. I don't think he maximized that, and I will not look back fondly. Plus, isn't that Marcel Mayer? Like, he now, I don't even know what he is. What do we make of him?
Mayer, Campbell is a Bloom guy. I mean, there's other ones.
No,
so,
but,
yeah.
Marcelo Mayer was supposed to be, he was the guy for a while. He was going to be some combination of Bonds, Otani, Trout, and Jeter. Like, mm-hmm. he was supposed to be the be-all, end-all, was supposed to be the number one pick. Oh, he fell to you at four. It's greatest thing ever. And I'm not even sure he's going to be here next year. I think people, if he wasn't injured, if he didn't have a back injury, I think he would probably be on the trade market right now with Tyquan Thornton.
Maybe. He might be. Christian Campbell, the Kyle Teal was taken fourth overall. He's a Bloom guy, too. Mayer, as you mentioned. Nick York, Mikey Romero, you know, there's some other guy. Roman Anthony. These are Bloom guys, and these are all guys who a lot is expected of. So that's sort of what I mean. Like, are you going to look back at the Bloom years and be like, oh, they were so good? That's not what I mean. Like, people are going to look back at Bloom and be like, maybe he wasn't so bad. Look at these guys that he held on to. Look at these guys that he drafted and brought up, and now they're big contributors on the major league level. And they may end up all sucking. Like, who knows? I'm just saying.
No.
There's a chance that, I think, anyway, if any of them are good, or if even, like, a handful of them are good, then people will look back at Bloom a little bit differently. Maybe not Allison in Cambridge, though, as she's on the line right now. Go ahead, Allison.
No, I'm just so furious about that statement. Ty Bloom seemed like a nice guy, but he totally broke things. That he could have, oh my God. So if he, I don't even know where to begin. So first of all, if Dave Dombrowski was still here, the people who were already here, Duran and Tristan Casas, are three pitchers, Brayan, Tanner, and Cutter, mm-hmm. are all Dave Dombrowski. So the people that are already here, Dave Dombrowski is. If you're going to credit Heim for people in the farm system that he refused to trade to other people, then he should have been the head of scouting and not a major league team. And what I would have liked to have seen is that he also created a very flawed team. One thing is Detroit. Everyone's like, well, we could be Detroit. No, we couldn't be Detroit. They have an ace in Scooper, which is so much better than three pitchers we have.
I agree.
They have balance of left and right left and right bats. They have great defense. We don't have Heim. Didn't value that everything was added. But I would have loved to have seen Dave Dombrowski. He probably would have traded some of his own people and gotten like better people and had us actually win. Heim also, he could have. He was his own worst enemy. I can't. It's so much like what Bill Belichick did to our offense, because Bill Belichick could have slightly done some different things.
All right, well, hold on. Let's stay on topic here. Why was Bloom his own worst enemy? Why? What did he do that was so bad? I feel like he was under strict limitation. Hold on, Allison, please. Just one second. I feel like he was under very strict parameters and wasn't given the freedom to go out and spend like Dombrowski was.
Within his parameters, Christian, please. Within his parameters, the fact is, in 2021, when he got Kyle Schwarber, he only picked him up because he was injured. We didn't have him for 3 weeks.
And that was a good little move, wasn't it?
It was, but then he should have kept him. When he found someone who worked here, he should have kept him. And as everyone said at the time, we knew he wasn't going to keep J.D. Martinez, and then Kyle Schwarber would have been our DH, and that would have been a place for him.
I agree. I would have liked him to keep Kyle Schwarber. We're up against the clock, Allison. Thanks for the call. Call back anytime. And I appreciate the passion. I just don't think Heim Bloom, I mean, him getting Kyle Schwarber, I thought was a good move. Not re-signing Schwarber, I thought, was a result of them not wanting to spend any money. Like, that was the problem. And those parameters, I mean, Sam Kennedy said as much. You got a new guy in here right now, and Craig Breslow was under the same parameters that Heim Bloom was, and the same problems are arising, aren't they? I know, Andy, you think that they're going to spend this offseason. I'll believe it when I see it. It's been 4 or 5 years now with Bloom, and now another one here with Breslow, where they've been operating and moving the exact same way, and I don't blame Heim Bloom for that. I don't. I blame ownership.
Yeah, ownership is absolutely to blame for the Heim Bloom era. I agree with that. And I would dream of the day that you're talking about, because we do this all the time. Who gets credit for success, right? Bill Belichick was helped a lot by Bill Parcells' players. Oftentimes when you win titles, the prior regime or GM laid a foundation, because no one's all that bad. Maybe Matt Millen in Detroit, but very few people give you nothing to build on, give you nothing. Like Gerard Mayo, we're going to say, well, he re-signed all of Bill Belichick's players. So if they find success, people are going to say some of it was with Belichick, and they're going to do the same thing with Bloom if these young players come up. But the reality is I still think he was a bit of a black hole in the front office for the Red Sox.
I think he was an easy scapegoat, and we'll see what ends up happening here. We'll see what he does with St. Louis, but I think that ownership was a bigger problem than Bloom was. Good call there, Allison. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we come back, we'll revisit something Greg Bedard said on his podcast with Nick Cattles over at CLNS Media. We got our recap of Thursday Night Football and picks for Week 5 all coming your way in the final hour of WEEI Afternoons right after this.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.